Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. A lawsuit that the town of Basalt filed against one of its citizens has been thrown out of court by a judge.
You're not going to win in a court of public opinion when you file a lawsuit against a citizen that files a CORA request.
And it appears that law enforcement agencies in Garfield County could be more forthcoming with information, especially when it comes to public safety.
They put stuff out when they want to put it out.
Traffic is on the minds of elected officials who authorized a $500,000 study to find alternative forms of transportation to relieve the bottleneck that is the entrance to Aspen.
The fact that you create a greater fire hose to try to drink out of, you still get washed away.
And growth pressures up and down the valley continue to beg the question of how many people the infrastructure can handle. The city of Aspen is asking itself that question as it contemplates keeping its right to build 150-foot-tall dams in the Castle and Maroon Creek valleys.
The weird part is the city has to go into the state and say, we can and will build these dams, and we intend to do so.
Joining me this week are Brent Gardner-Smith, Executive Director of Aspen Journalism, Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. Well, thank you for coming in and Randy being on the phone.
Great to be here.
Thanks for inviting me.
So let's start with Scott Condon's in the studio today, reporter for the Aspen Times, and you had a story a couple days ago about the ongoing lawsuit between a resident and the town of Basalt over what was an issue from the election, right?
Right. Yeah, this was kind of a strange one in the sense that a woman who had suspicions about the election in Basalt, she had filed a CORA request to try to get some information that she thought was relevant to her issues. And right after she filed the CORA request, the town filed a lawsuit against her. And they said it was for just it wasn't per se against her, like a intimidation thing. They said it was just for a declaratory judgment to see, get direction from a judge of what exactly they're supposed to do, because the town attorney, Tom Smith, said it was a gray area with texts, and he couldn't find any case law that said texts had to be treated like emails.
So then the judge finally tossed it out?
Yeah, and so the Mary Kenyon, the Basalt resident who filed the requests for information, she requested a hearing to try to get to the bottom, in her eyes, of why this lawsuit was filed. And the judge went ahead and dismissed the lawsuit. The town went ahead and requested a voluntary dismissal because they couldn't get the text that Mary Kenyon was seeking, and so they said it was a moot point.
Right, and these are text messages between the mayoral candidate, Jackie Whitsitt, and the town clerk, Pam Schilling.
Correct.
Do we have any sense whether this is just an outgrowth of unnecessary or of nastiness within everything that's going on in Basalt around this election and these issues? I mean, it seems almost obvious on the face of it that text messages ought to be included along with emails and other things. And I'm wondering, was there an extent to which do you think that the town was wanted to fight every inch of that rather than simply saying, sure, we can give you those because it would seem obvious that they're included?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, you can't always tell people's motives. And the town says they needed clarification from a judge. Mary Kenyon thought it was clear. I will note that the attorneys that advise Colorado Press Association and members of the Colorado Press Association, they have said that it is clear that texts are part of the public record.
I mean, obviously, given this group in the studio here, we're all, and on the phone, we're all going to stand up in favor of maximum disclosure, but this certainly would seem to be an obvious case.
You're not going to win in the court of public opinion when you file a lawsuit against a citizen that files a CORA request.
Right.
That's a given, I think.
Yeah. And we learned that with Pitkin County and Red Mountain resident Elizabeth Shook. And she did the same thing when they fought around her CORA request. The county did, and she won. So, Randy, you have an issue with some information that did not come out right away in Carbondale regarding a woman who had been assaulted.
Yeah, I think this is indicative of an openness issue that we have with law enforcement agencies in Garfield County. Both Pitkin County and Eagle County are better at this than law enforcement agencies here. And in this instance, the Carbondale police chief issued a news release on Monday after we contacted him because there were posts on Facebook about an assault Friday night near the Carbondale park and ride. And the news release said that it was the second of its type, where a guy had run up behind a woman, grabbed her inappropriately, and, you know, in both cases, very fortunately, the women were able to get away. So the police chief says, we want to caution women about walking alone in the evening. And, you know, the assault was on a Friday night. The news release came out on a Monday only after we called and asked what was going on. And if in fact, and this is an argument that I've made with police chiefs and the sheriff here, that, you know, we have a website, we have social media, we probably have greater digital reach than anybody else in the county. And I'm sure we do. And if, in fact, you're concerned that women shouldn't be walking alone, don't you want to get that out on a weekend night? We're working, you know, they're public servants. And I wish that our local law enforcement agencies would be more proactive about this kind of thing.
What was their response when you asked for that?
Less selective about what they decide is worth putting out.
What was their response when you had asked for that information to be put out publicly?
We're on the radio, so I don't want to be unfair. They have small staff. Sometimes people are out of town. But essentially, these law enforcement agencies, Glenwood Springs Police, Garfield County Sheriff, Carbondale, and I think Carbondale, for the most part, is a little bit smaller, and that's got something to do with it. But they put stuff out when they want to put it out. And when I talk to them about it, they say, we should be responsive when you call, and we'll try to work that out. But they put stuff out when they want to put it out.
Lip service.
It's frustrating. I think that there are instances when it can put the public safety at danger. I don't think it serves the public well overall.
You don't have any
on the radio. They might get mad at me, but it's nothing I haven't said to their face.
You don't have any sense that they were purposely not putting it out. You just think they were, I hate to say this, but they were too lazy or too busy to take the time to put it out?
I think it is a very low priority.
And it's a paragraph. It's how long does it take to write a paragraph, guys?
Right. And, you know, if you signed up for Pitkin Alerts, you get four phone calls and three emails when somebody gets stuck in the Aspen traffic circle. So
I thought the press release was strange, too, because it listed look out for a Hispanic man, right? And I don't want to make the situation worse, but I thought to just casually toss that out there could drive a wedge in a community really quickly. It's like,
especially Carbondale.
And so, you know, is that really the case, and is that really necessary?
I think it's really hard to tell in some instances who's Hispanic and who's not, and I have always had a policy of to not use descriptions unless there is some public danger. You know, you'll see news releases about what somebody who robbed a place was wearing, and I figure even a stupid robber is smart enough to change his or her clothes within a few hours. Maybe not. In this instance, you know, you're warning the public, and it was a 5'5" Hispanic guy, and while that may create some undue fear, it does feel like somewhat useful information.
I disagree. I thought it was poorly written, and I thought the paper shouldn't have printed it either. It just seems
I wouldn't defend that very vigorously at all.
So, Brent, you're only objecting, if I get it correct, to the inclusion of the Hispanic part of it.
Yeah.
A 5'5" male.
Dark hair. Yeah, I just think it's such a broad brush term, and it's such a look out for all Hispanic guys in Carbondale. They might mug you on the trail is basically the message that it sends. And I just think it's grossly unfair to the Hispanic community to do that.
on that note, you know, we are not immune from outside crime. And, you know, while Glenwood Canyon was closed on Wednesday, it opened back up on Thursday because they had issues with the rockfall mitigation project and down winds for the helicopter's safety. That sent all the traffic through Aspen over Independence Pass. And there was a hostage situation on Wednesday evening that shut down the pass for a couple hours after the canyon had opened, but there was still some cars coming through, and so they were affected. And it just goes to show that we are not immune anymore to outside influences. And this guy who was arrested, he had had some sort of altercation on the road with another motorist and had taken out a gun and was shooting it at the ground and all around and pointing it at people and took a hostage, and the hostage was able to get free. But it just shows that this valley is not the same as it used to be when it comes to crime.
You think that was a road rage incident brought on by the closure of Glenwood Canyon?
I don't know, but when I was talking to the undersheriff on Wednesday night, there was a lot of pressures up there. So we don't know all the details. I'm sure that'll be in the paper today, and we'll learn a little bit more. But it's certainly plausible.
Carolyn, I want to ask the question whether this is, you say it's a question of we're not immune to outside influences. I don't think that's different. This town has never been immune to outside influences because we welcome and have a steady stream of people from the outside coming through here. I just think what we're seeing is perhaps a reflection of changes in the larger society. So the fact that there are people out there with who are armed and think that waving guns around is a good answer. And of course, there are people who will say the answer to that problem is to have more people with guns. I wonder if this situation would have resolved itself more swiftly had everybody been armed.
Yeah, small towns typically reflect what's going on nationally, right?
So. Well, something to think about before you give an international hand gesture to any motorist out there. I mean, you really, it's traffic and population growth does lead to more and more road rage, and I see it more and more in the valley and more around Colorado. And
Carolyn, one thing to note, I think Pickens County and City of Aspen, Aspen Police Department, deserve kudos for staffing, you know, the closure gate and getting semis turned around before they created even more of a mess up on Independence Pass. Some friends of mine came back from Denver via Cottonwood Pass, and they got stuck with the semis that had gone up there. And it just seems like there should be better coordination between CDOT and Eagle County Sheriff's Office for not letting, and Garfield County, for not letting, you know, big rigs going up on Cottonwood Pass as well.
That shouldn't have happened. You know, one thing I want to say about your traffic up there, I have a hard time feeling sorry for you because it goes right by our door every day.
That's true.
We thought it was your traffic, Randy.
Well, you know, it's, again, small towns, small communities reflect national issues, and population growth and traffic is happening in most states. And Colorado's predicted to grow 40% by 2040. And so this pressure is there. And down, you know, and outside of Glenwood, you've got Kettle Creek, you know, that area being expanded on Highway 82 with turnout lanes. And now the elected transportation officials committee, they just approved $500,000 for yet another study on the entrance to Aspen. And when I say yet another, we've had 36 votes on the entrance to Aspen and a record of decision from CDOT suggesting that we do a straight shot. And the question is, okay, we have more people and we're going to have more people. So what are you going to study? We know that we have second homes that need their gardeners and their landscapers and their painters and the army that it takes to take care of one home. So they're coming in on their trucks. How do you, light rail?
Well, I may have a larger appetite for studying the entrance to Aspen than others. I don't think because we've studied it a lot or we voted on a lot that we should stop talking about it, because we have this major crisis in the town of, in terms of getting traffic in and out every day. It's a poor reflection on town, and it's causing, I call it the global warming parade. So to say that, oh, we've been studying it, so we shouldn't study this anymore, I think it does disservice to the problem. maybe we should call it the exit to Pitkin County or give it a new name. But we say, oh, we can't talk about the entrance to Aspen. And we have to talk about it. It's a nightmare. It's a cluster. It happens every day. And so I'm not sure. I haven't looked at this particular study. I don't know what they're really trying to achieve. Maybe they're trying to look at the latest in light rail technology. The bus rapid transit stations that we built are really train stations, by the way. They are meant to be light rail stations. And so I think BRT stands for Bus Reveals Train, that we now have the infrastructure to put light rail in should we choose to do that. We also don't need a vote to do that. The city of Aspen has already, voters have already said, yes, you can build light rail in two lanes across Marault. That's on the record. City of Aspen's already done that. And so if we want to do that, we could. And so maybe they're looking at, well, maybe we should look at this some more.
I think, you know, I'm going to side with Brent on this, which is just that I think we need to keep studying it until we come up with a good answer.
We all have to agree on that answer then.
Well, but nonetheless, yes, we have to find a workable solution that people can agree on. I mean, it has been suggested, which is another way of saying, I once wrote in my column that that just doing a straight shot across the Marault or any kind of straight shot into town doesn't really solve the main problem, which is too much traffic coming into town. So the fact that you create a greater fire hose to try to drink out of, you still get washed away. And scooting all that traffic into town in the most efficient fashion possible just means that the town becomes more desperately overwhelmed with cars in a hurry. So I personally, you know, I would question whether that really is a solution.
That was Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times, Brent Gardner-Smith, executive editor of Aspen Journalism, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, participated in our weekly roundtable discussion, Valley Roundup. Look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley.
One study that I'd like to see, too, is a carrying capacity study. And I know people roll their eyes, but, you know, at some point, the Roaring Fork Valley's got to decide, how many people can we really accommodate? And I don't think the answer is keep on adding infrastructure, because you're just going to end up destroying the place that you're trying to save. So, yeah, a carrying capacity in the sense of how many people can we support and where.
There's a lot of interesting issues to talk about, too. For example, should we close Owl Creek Road so that everybody in Snowmass Village doesn't take advantage of the Owl Creek Road sneak? Can you imagine the revolution that would cause in Snowmass, right? We know that Owl Creek Road is being used a lot, and it slows up that entrance to Aspen quite a bit,
well,
just like the school students. Should we close that road?
That's why we paved it, right?
Well, should we close it and make everybody in Snowmass go get on a bus or a train at Brush Creek Intercept Lot? Yeah, good luck with that, right? But should we at least talk about that? Should we at least talk about the factors that the school has? Burlingame hasn't helped, right? And so
right. That was part of the argument when it was going through the approval process about urban sprawl.
Right. So we at least need to get these out on the table and give us something to fight about for a while.
And I think
that really Glenwood Springs faces the same issue, and Scott mentioned carrying capacity. When we do the bridge detour next year, we will really see how geographically limited this town is. It's so narrow. There's really not any good way to add any infrastructure here, which when we talk about housing, you know, Glenwood Springs, it's hard to conceive of Glenwood being able to provide much of an answer there. So, you know, it's at both ends of the valley, and I know you all feel it with the influx of tourists, but as somebody said last February, every roll of toilet paper and a great many of the tourists that go up valley come through here.
I think a significant issue is the real estate and construction economy that we've created for ourselves, and I don't know how to tame that beast. I've thought, well, maybe we could have you only get to build $100 million worth of homes a year, and after that you have to stop. I mean, we have this mindset that we have to continue to stoke the economy constantly, and or else the experiment that is Aspen will fail. And I think we're at the point where one could begin to argue that, well, it's already failed because it's been overbuilt and it's gotten grotesquely out of control in terms of the economic throughput, as Michael Kinsley calls it, that we're pumping through this valley. At what point do we say, okay, enough? I mean, if we think we're slow growth, we're completely deluding ourselves, because we're obviously not. I've been driving around the state quite a bit going to water meetings, and this is the busiest corridor that you can encounter in Colorado outside of the Front Range. The intensity between Glenwood Springs and Aspen is higher than any other mountain town valley. And so I think backed ourselves into a fine little pickle based on what we have here.
You know, Scott used the term carrying capacity, which then he said, oh, nobody likes that term. And I agree, nobody likes that term, but I think there's a really good concept behind it, as you were saying. At what point do we say enough? At what point can it be said this? We need to reach a more of a steady state economy here. We cannot be, even Brent, you said if we say slow growth, we're deluding ourselves. Well, even slow growth is growth. And the fact of the matter is at some point we may reach a level at which we cannot accommodate any more growth. We still have people saying we need more hotel rooms in town. I don't know how we would accommodate the people who will fill those hotel rooms. We are building these great big mansions in town. I mean, at some point, something has to slow down or even come to a halt.
Of course, I have to confess I'm completely part of the problem. I drive my car up from Basalt on a regular basis, and I'm employed in the luxury real estate economy, at least the family is. And so, you know, I don't know how to get myself out of the problem, out of the mix. I can put myself on the bus, and I do occasionally, and it's a lot better than it used to be.
Why don't you get on the bus more?
I think 90% of it is laziness, but that's about it. I have real no excuse. I'm part of the people who have no excuse.
What did you said there was a few different classes?
I think there's three people on the highway. There's the embittered. Those are all the people who are driving to Aspen every morning because they're going to work and they're not happy about going to Aspen. They don't want to go to Aspen except that they have to because that's where the work is. And they drive a long ways to get there, and they're usually not amused when I pull out in my Subaru sipping a latte in Basalt, right? And then there's the entitled, the people who just feel that the world should part for them so that they can coast into Aspen. And then I'm part of what I would call the mellow middle. If you make transit nice enough, you can get me out of my Subaru and onto mass transit. And the bus rapid transit has probably tripled my bus riding because I can now stumble to a bus stop without worrying about the schedule, and a bus will come in a reasonable amount of time and get me to Aspen relatively quickly.
What about the people who have the mothers who have to take their kids all over the place and go grocery shopping and take this one to ballet and that one over to that?
Look, anybody who has an excuse gets a hall pass. You got kids, you got tools, you're a realtor, whatever. Okay, fine. We shouldn't have that discussion. We shouldn't have the discussion about, well, you want me to carry my tools on light rail? No, we're not talking about you. You're not the target audience.
And it makes your commute with your tools much easier if you get tools like Brent off the highway and cut down the amount of traffic. And then that makes it easier for the guys in the pickup trucks. They should be in favor of this. It would make their lives better. But somehow they were rallied to oppose something that actually would have helped them.
Right. And I think that industry ought to be at the table for these discussions and this kind of study about if you are going to spend a bunch of money trying to find a solution. Those people should be part of the conversation, in my opinion, whether if there's any way you could accommodate them to a point where they don't have to drive every day.
Well, I think it gets back to the local government, and at what point do they want to say, okay, let's put a cap on this. Let's stop issuing building permits. When do we do that? When do we talk to the city of Aspen and say, stop spending $1 million on marketing? We're busy enough. And so that's $1 million of taxpayer money, by the way, they spend a year on marketing. And so if we can get the city to stop being the Chamber of Commerce, that might help. If we can get Pickens County to take a hard, cold look about how tied in their organization is to cut to the construction economy, that might help. But that's about as likely as me not driving my Subaru to
And of course, a lot of that marketing money they spend is to overcome the bad effects of the traffic jams coming into town. So
talk about growth and population pressures. There's a meeting next week about possible dams being built in the Castle and Maroon Creek valleys if we ever get to a point where we run out of water. Right, Brett?
Well, the city's been holding on to conditional water rights since 1965 to build a 155-foot-tall dam within view of the Maroon Bells and a 170-foot-tall dam just below Ashcroft.
How likely?
Well, in the world of conditional water rights, to give the city some credit, usually it's relatively easy 6 years, every 6 years, for the city to go in and BS the state and tell them, yeah, we're making progress on building these dams, and so let us hold on to our conditional water rights. I mean, 6 years ago, the city told the state it has, quote, steadily applied efforts to complete the dams. Well, that's not really true. So they go in and bullshit the state, and the state says, okay, well, that's cool. Why don't you just hang on to these conditional water rights? Usually it's a pro forma exercise, and no one cares. But because there's been some reporting on this upcoming diligence filing, the Wilderness Workshop has rallied and said, well, let's challenge the city as to whether or not they're really going to build these dams. Because the weird part is the city has to go into the state and say, we can and will build these dams, and we intend to do so. And the state says, well, okay, then keep your conditional water rights. And then you go and ask the city, really? Do you intend to build those dams? And they're like, oh, we're never going to do that. We're just maintaining our water rights. Well, at some point, you have to have an intellectually honest discussion with the city of Aspen, which is very difficult to do on this issue. Are you going to build these things or not? And do you really need them? They're like, well, you know, we might need them someday, but it's not clear that they do. They just did their own water availability study that said, we got enough water, and maybe someday if we run out of water, we'll have to stop irrigating the golf course.
What happens if the city gives up those water rights? Who does it go to?
Nothing. Then just, you know, I mean, anybody can go in and file for a water right on any river in Colorado at any time. You know, if the water is there and you can put it to a beneficial use, you can take it out of the river. And so nothing really happens. It means they lose their place in line. The city could drop these 1965 rights and go back next week and apply for a 2016 right, and it wouldn't really matter. There's no real magic in a 1965 right. It's just someday, 50 years from now, it might be. One could argue if you need to build a dam, 150-foot tall dam, within view of the Maroon Bells to keep the Aspen experiment going, then we need to declare that the experiment has failed.
No, I understand that point, but but could that water end up, you know, being used for fracking in Western Garfield County at some point if the city didn't possess it?
Well, I suppose it could run down the river to the Colorado, and someone could take it out of the Colorado. You know, there is value in stored water. There is value if you put water behind a reservoir. It gives you more flexibility, and you have options. Whether the city really needs that water or not is a big question. And if they don't need it, if they can't use it, then you can't speculate that you might need it someday and hang on to it. That's another key tenet of the law. So the real question is, hey, City of Aspen, do you really need that? Now, municipalities get a big hall pass from the state that they might need water someday because they're municipalities. But now there's a little tightening that says, well, you got to show that you're going to grow into that need. So when they originally applied for this, they said, you know, City of Aspen might grow to be 30,000 people someday. Well, it's six. And so is City of Aspen going to grow to 30,000 people someday and need this water? The city is saying, well, we may not grow, but climate change may come along and add more value to a reservoir up there. Well, okay, maybe. But it's also not clear under climate change in Colorado whether it's going to be drier or wetter. It's going to be hotter, but it's not clear if it's going to be drier or wetter. I'll probably bet on drier, but... The other thing they haven't done is they haven't, that I know of, they haven't said, all right, we might need to store some water somewhere. How much do we need, and where's the best place to store it? The city doesn't have that study. If they have, they haven't made it public. So they're just clinging to these rights because they're on the books, as opposed to, I think, saying, well, okay, what's our real demand for stored water? And if it's high, where should we put it? There's a meeting, public meeting at 5 o'clock on Thursday. Next Thursday.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming in, and Randy on the phone.
Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome.
Been a pleasure.
That was Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism, Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times, and Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.